everyone. We're back with the sixth episode of Mental Blossoms, a mental health podcast by goodlies.in. मैं हूं मुस्कान, आज के एपिसोड की होस्ट, और आज हमारे साथ हैं एक बहुत ही स्पेशल गेस्ट, आशना आरिफ. Now, Ashna is the creative manager at Chebang, but she is more popularly known to her Instagram audience as a fashion and lifestyle influencer. An active mental health advocate, Ashna has been associated with Good Life for quite some time now, and she has been helping us raise awareness about mental health in every way possible. We also have with us today our counseling psychologist, Anisha Basu Chaudhary. Anisha na sirf hame Ashna ki story samajhne mein madad karengi, par hame kuch tips aur tricks bhi dengi to take care of our mental health. So make sure you stay tuned till the end for that. Hi Ashna, hi Anisha. Very warm welcome to the podcast.
Hi Muskan, thank you.
Hi Muskan.
Hi. So Good Lives is a mental health service organization that aims to help people find the right guidance about keeping their mental health upright. मेंटल हेल्थ के आसपास चलते हुए स्टिग्मा की वजह से कई सारे लोग ट्रीटमेंट रिसीव नहीं कर पाते, विच इज वाई आवर विजन एट गुड लाइव्स इज टू डीस्टिग्मेटाइज थेरेपी एंड टू मेक मेंटल हेल्थ ट्रीटमेंट एक्सेसिबल एंड अफोर्डेबल फॉर वन एंड ऑल. नाउ वी आर डूइंग दिस क्योंकि हम जानते हैं कि मेंटल हेल्थ सभी को एक से ज्यादा तौर से अफेक्ट करती है, विच मीन्स हैविंग अ कन्वर्सेशन अबाउट इट बिकम्स ऑल द मोर इम्पॉर्टेंट. Ashna, as you mentioned before, is an influencer, and it goes without saying that being in the public domain brings with itself a bunch of pitfalls as well. So dealing with hate comments and trolls and body shaming and cancel culture and it all affecting a person's mental health is the dark side of being a social media influencer. But Ashna's journey with mental health goes way back to when she was a 15-year-old foreign exchange student in Singapore. Ashna will take it forward from here.
For sure. Thank you so much for that introduction, Muskan. First of all, I'm so glad to be on this podcast and to be able to voice my story and hopefully help other people who may be facing similar situations now or in the near future. I think as a 15-year-old, nobody really prepares you for what life is going to throw at you, especially when you're in a brand new country all by yourself and you know, you're not sure what to do with all the change that's around you. I didn't have my family with me and I was raised as an only child, so always used to having some kind of support and my family around. But eventually, you know, when I decided that, okay, this might be a good opportunity, and when Singapore came calling for me, of course, I jumped at the opportunity. I'm not really weighing out the pros and cons of homesickness and health and, you know, just the general fear of being all by yourself in a brand new place. And as a 15-year-old, you're at the peak of your adolescence, your hormones are all over the place, and you're just trying to figure life out. I think it was all of this and also the pressure of having to perform that first pushed me to wonder why, instead of growing mentally and becoming more positive in my outlook, I ended up, you know, skipping classes on purpose. I ended up sleeping more than I should. I was eating out of depression, and I didn't fully understand what the problem might be. But when I approached a teacher of mine and asked him what I could do about a situation like this, I'm so glad that the first thing he said was, I think you should visit our in-house counselor. We have someone who does therapy for free. All you have to do is book an appointment in advance and you can speak to whoever you want to. There was a male counselor and a female counselor. So going by my comfort zone, I chose the female counselor. And I think I made the right choice because she was around the same age as my mom was back then. And she had the same demeanor, the same sort of softness and warmth that I could relate to, which I think is so important when you seek help from someone. You really want to be able to relate to them in some way or the other if you really have to open up to them about your deepest, darkest fears. I guess 3 sessions in was when she let me know that I might be suffering from anxiety, separation anxiety, and anxiety in general. That the little episodes where I would break down and start crying for no reason were not just bouts of madness or, you know, me being fussy, but were actually panic attacks of some form. All of this was brand new nomenclature to me. I had no idea what any of this meant. Luckily, in the 2 years that I was in Singapore, she took me through that journey of understanding what all of that could mean. So yeah, as a 15-year-old, and then, you know, soon I turned 16. Back then, that was a huge milestone to turn 16. They say sweet 16, but There weren't a lot of sweet things about it. I grew up constantly questioning my body image, and you know, being a brown girl in another country is never that easy either. There's so many subtle hints of racism that you have to deal with. There's so many questions about where you're from that you have to deal with. So yeah, I would say I wouldn't wish some kind of fate like that on another 15-year-old, but going by how things are today, 10, 11 years down the line, I think it's becoming worse, right? I forget 15, there are 11, 12-year-olds out there who are actively seeking help or are moving towards self-harm and things like that because they don't really know where to vent out what they're feeling. So as a 15-year-old, I guess I was extremely lucky to have gotten that kind of help. Although it's sad to say, but it's a fact that if I were in India when I was 15, about 10, 11 years ago, I don't know if that was the same kind of approach that I would have been exposed to. I wouldn't be sure of whether an Indian school teacher would direct me to therapy instead of maybe call my parents and tell them, hey, I think something's wrong with your daughter. So I'm hoping that has changed for the better in the current scenario, that young teenagers can go up to their teachers and be redirected towards therapy and proper professional form of counseling and not just assumptions about who they are or who they might be.
Absolutely. I think there was a lot of things that you had to deal with in a foreign land all alone, but I'm happy you did find the help you did in the end. So talking a little bit more about that, would you like to share your experience seeking help at such a young age? Because I believe in India, we can't seek therapy independently until we're 18. We have to be accompanied by our folks or our guardian. So how was the experience for you?
I was extremely, I would say, terrified of the fact that they may immediately call my parents and tell them that something wasn't right with me. But luckily, since I was a foreign exchange student there and I had a guardian who I could go to for any kind of help, she sort of took it upon herself and she said, hey, don't worry, I'm going to sign off on whatever needs to be done. And I will only take it to your family when you tell me and the counselor tells me that, yes, I think now is a good time to discuss it with parents. Although it's interesting to note that talking to my parents was never off the table, considering that I was a minor and also considering that I was a foreign student. Talking to my parents was always on the cards, but I had that little bit of liberty to choose when I was ready to open up to them. And I think that gave me a little more confidence, because the first thing you're afraid of, you know, when you're trying to make it big somewhere else and your parents get a call saying, hey, you know, there might be something wrong with your kid, or she's skipping class too often, or she's sick all the time. That is not something your parents all the way in India want to hear. They're probably going to worry. They're probably going to want to catch the next flight and come and see you. I wanted to actively avoid all of that, but lucky for me, they were extremely gentle with me. And that's something to be noted, the fact that to be kind and to be gentle with people who are expressing mental health issues is so, so important.
I'm absolutely sure it must have been extremely difficult for you to go through all of these issues all at once. And I totally understand. And I think every one of our listeners would also somehow be able to relate to what you were feeling then. And now, if you're comfortable telling us, I think you did touch upon this topic a little bit, but at length, if you're comfortable telling us, did you ever sit your parents down and, you know, have a quality conversation about, hey, this is what I'm going through, and, you know, basically having them react to it?
Yeah, when 2 years down the lane, I was supposed to complete 4 years there, but it became almost impossible for me to go through with my term. So 2 years in, I decided to quit the program and come back. That in itself was a huge disappointment for them, as it would be for any parent, but they weren't really up to speed yet on what was happening. So once I came back, I had this conversation with them. And again, lucky me to have parents who didn't really just pounce at me and, you know, call me a failure straight up. They let me speak. They gave me the time and they gave me the patience. They gave me a year to listen to. which is when I explained to them that I was constantly feeling these bouts of, you know, panic. I wouldn't sleep too well, insomnia. I was losing hair. I was putting on weight. And I guess they sort of figured that maybe, you know, 15 wasn't the right age to send a kid out. But at the same time, they wanted me to chase my dream. So I understood their dilemma as well. Despite being extremely understanding people, my parents were still a little hard on me, I would say. They would constantly question any future endeavor of mine. So once I was back, I was 16 or 17, and I had to come back and repeat my 10th grade here. That was when they were very critical of me. They weren't sure if anything that I took up, I would take to its fruition, if I would complete any of those efforts. But I guess what really helped then was the fact that I told them that I would like to get a few medical tests done and figure out if there's anything else that might be wrong with me, physically, not just mentally. And I had also told them that I would like to find a therapist here as well. Now, the first reaction that my parents had, and mind you, these are modern liberal parents who are supposed mm-hmm. to have an open outlook, right? Even they had a first reaction of, but why therapy? Why? What's wrong with you? Do you have a mental problem? Now, a mental problem in Indian, in the Indian context can mean a lot of different things, right? It could also mean Absolutely. That you're, yeah, it could mean so many things. It could mean that maybe your child has a cognitive issue, which is not necessarily true. Some of the most brilliant people in the world suffer from anxiety, suffer from bipolar disorder, suffer from so many other known and unknown mental illnesses. So for them to come to terms with that fact took some time. Of course, that little period when I didn't get their support was detrimental to me because I ended up really slumping. You know, I wasn't sure if they were going to get me that help. And here in India, like you said, unless you're 18, you can't go to a doctor and get any kind of consultation without your parent or guardian around. So the fact that they were still on the fence about taking me to therapy, and also the fact that I wasn't able to seek this help myself, both of these things put together really, really sent me down this abyss, this rabbit hole of never recovering. And I was in a really, really bad phase. Yeah, back then.
I mean, I can't believe how you must have dealt with such extreme symptoms. It's just the age of 15, 16, and when you were all alone mm-hmm. in a foreign land altogether. So more power to you, sister.
Thank you.
It's also extremely refreshing to hear you mention the silver lining in everything. It's absolutely very, mm-hmm. The fact that you're very grateful for the things that you had at that time, very refreshing. And you mentioned about having, you know, stomach aches and sleepless nights. And here I'd like Anisha to weigh in and tell us a little bit about our mental disturbances showing up as physical symptoms. And when do we know that we have to take the step towards recovery?
Muskan, I would say firstly, Ashna, you have had a long journey and you have come a long way. And if I have to reflect on your case itself, a lot of your mental health disturbances showed up as physical symptoms like insomnia or hair loss or stomach aches, etc. And here I would like to tell our listeners that our entire body and mind have a very, very intense connection. So anything that happens with either one has an effect on the other. So if your mind is not healthy, your body shows symptoms to tell you that, okay, take care of something. So if I give you a very simple example, if we are thinking of something for a very long time and we are really stressing over it, a lot of people actually have headaches at the end of it. That is our body telling you that, you know, whatever you're thinking, you're putting too much stress on it, maybe take a break, you know, some form of relaxation. So a lot of our mental health disturbances show up as symptoms. In Ashna's cases, with anxiety, with panic attack, you have a lot of physical symptoms like, you know, you sweat a lot, your heart rate would go up and down a lot. You would have an intense fear, an intense worry, So these are all symptoms that, you know, your mental disturbances will show up as. And as to your second part of the question, when is it do we know that, when is the time to actually seek help?
Mm-hmm.
I would say mental health is all about being aware. It's about being aware of what is happening within you. So what are some of your thoughts? What are some of your feelings? How are you behaving because of those? So once you get aware of those, you know when it is becoming maladaptive. You know when it is not working at your best. If you know that you are constantly criticizing yourself for something that you don't have control over, suppose you're constantly body shaming yourself, suppose you're not eating, you're starving yourself because you want to reduce weight, or maybe you're overeating because you don't know how to control your weight, or you feel you're constantly worrying about endless things in your life. These are all thoughts that you're having. So once you become aware of these thoughts, that's when you know that it's time to seek help. And if you are not aware, your mind and your body will eventually tell you when it's you, when you're almost hitting rock bottom, that listen, please go seek help. So even if you are not aware, somewhere or the other, your body does give you signs and symptoms. And if you are aware, then well and good, you know when you need help. So I think mental health is all about awareness, and that is what you need to do as an individual. Be aware of your mental health, and it will tell you when to go seek help.
Right. Raising the awareness you mentioned, Anisha, is all that we're trying to do here with Mental Blossoms and Good Lives and with Ashna on board. So thank you so much. It was extremely helpful what you just mentioned. Coming back to you, Ashna, what turn did your journey take when you came back to India? How was the ride from there?
It was an extremely bumpy ride. I mean, I think I hit my lowest point when I ended up becoming suicidal, and I didn't really think of myself as that kind of a person. Previously, when I was younger, I would always assume that weak people take such a step, and that, you know, you have to be really, really not in love with yourself to do something like that. But then it's a whole other story when you're in that place yourself, right? When you end up being in this place where you know that you're messing up, you know that you're not really on your optimal best, and then you think, you know what? What is this? What is the point of this whole life? That was where I was at. I ended up attempting something that I'm not proud of, but it happened. Okay, and that was when I guess my parents really stepped in and realized, okay, she was not joking. She really, really needs help. It's sad that it had to get to that point. But then again, I want to, like you said, look at the silver lining and think of it as I made it. I survived. I'm having this conversation with you guys today, and I'm so grateful for it, because so many of them don't make it. So many of them, they get stuck in that loop and they don't make it out. So I think that was when, you know, things got a little more streamlined. I was given a little time to take a break. I was taken for a few tests. They figured out that I actually suffer from acute hypothyroidism. So for any of our listeners who may or may not know about this, I'll just quickly touch base on what that could be. Hypothyroidism is when the hormone thyroxine, which has a, which is a growth hormone, as well as it has a lot of effect on your, you know, female hormones, on your progesterone, on your estrogen, things like that, for women especially. What happens is when you produce less of it, when your body doesn't produce enough of it naturally, is when you have hypothyroidism. Now, hair fall, weight gain, bad skin, immense mood swings are just some of the very, very common symptoms of hypothyroidism. So when they put me onto that medication, and of course, when I found a therapist that was able to sort of work for me, and again, that was not a journey that clicked instantly. I mean, even if, the, let's say, there were, like how we have a Bumble, if you had a Bumble for therapists, even then it wouldn't work so perfectly. It was just a hit. It was a hit or miss. Right. In most situations, until I found that one perfect fit. Not to say that the other therapists weren't good at what they did. Of course not. They're all trained. They know what they're doing. But sometimes it's all about finding the right fit to someone who just you can click with and who you can vibe with. And so with my thyroxine medication on track every day, which I still take till today, there isn't really a cure for this, but I've found other ways to bring myself up to speed with my health. With that medication as well as therapy a year in, I was able to really, really, you know, reach my peak. I was able to overcome all those things that were pulling me down. There was a point in time where I finally, you know, went back to doing, you know, music. I went back to doing sports. I started exercising, and that made a huge, huge difference. The fact that I was putting an effort into take care of myself and to, you know, keep time aside and care about myself more. It took me onto two very important journeys. A, that of self-awareness. The fact that I knew what worked for me and what didn't. And B, of just love and effort towards myself, you know, because I think self-love isn't something that you can just push a button on a remote and make it work. It's not a flip switch. It's a very long, detailed journey. I'm still on that journey. I'm still learning to love myself a little more every day. I'm still learning new things about what clicks for me and what doesn't. But the point is that I put in that effort to learn those things about myself. It was a very tumultuous journey for a good 3-4 years. But by the time I hit 20, which was again a huge milestone, a lot of people around me were worried that I'd be a lost 20-year-old. But I sort of flipped that journey and turned the tables on that supposed faith, and I'm so glad that I did.
Right. You know, there used to be a time when I used to have the exact same opinion about being so weak as to taking that step. A lot of learning and unlearning has got me where I am too. But right, Ashna, you're doing amazing on your journey, no doubt. It's absolutely refreshing. I'm saying it again, but very refreshing and inspiring to hear what you have to say about it. If you can take it forward from here, what would you say is your state right now? How do you think you're dealing with it, and how effective are your coping mechanisms at this point?
Coping mechanisms are something that I think you figure out with trial and error. It's never the same for everybody. It's not a one-size-fits-all situation. There are certain things that work for some people, they don't work for other people. That also depends on your diagnosis. Now, currently, I have a diagnosis of anxiety. Panic attacks are something that I still get, but the frequency has greatly reduced. I remember the last proper panic attack that I had was when lockdown was announced. I wasn't even sure of why that happened, but it did. And I was really not sure of where things were going to go from there. I guess the uncertainty and the fear of not knowing what was going to happen, all of those things put me into this trap. Now, I was very lucky to have my partner with me at that point in time. He was very aware of how to deal with that situation. How that happened is because once I was able to figure out what works for me, now my therapist, who I've been with for the past 4 or 5 years, he was able to put me into this routine of doing certain breathing exercises, certain counting exercises, listening to certain types of music, finding ways to find peace and calm. These are the things that really, really helped me. And what I also did was ensure that the people around me, at least the ones closest to me, were aware of these things. When someone with anxiety is having a panic attack, they don't really have that presence of mind to take care of themselves at that point in time. It's unreasonable to expect someone to take care of themselves. If you're alone, it's a whole other thing, right? You probably call someone, you probably video call somebody. But when you're not alone, it's very important for your closest family members and friends to know exactly how to deal with that situation, and to even prep them and say, hey, don't worry, this doesn't mean that I'm going to become suicidal again. It doesn't mean that I'm going to harm you. It also doesn't mean that I'm going to lose control. It just means that at that point in time, you need to be my anchor and you need to be wary of the facts that trigger me. Trigger points are, again, a very subjective thing. Trigger points can be so many different things to people. Now, for example, whenever I hear of certain situations where, you know, somebody's, you know, being hurt, or when I see any kind of animal abuse, those few things, some of the many things, are huge, huge triggers for me. And people around me, you know, they're conscious of the fact that those things don't really come out in front of me. Of course, being on the internet, you're exposed to all sorts of things. You never really have the option to completely stay away from these things. But yeah, that helped. That really helped, the fact that there were people around me who were willing to just support me and be my strength when it's needed. What happens is things like this can come off as signs of weakness to other people. Everyone isn't really going to understand what you're going through at that point in time. There could be times when other people, when I say other people, I mean colleagues, I mean peers, I mean people who don't really know you on an emotional level. Okay. Those people might actually not be able to completely understand your situation, which is fine. Expecting that from colleagues or strangers is also a little bit unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that I have now this amazing partner, which I didn't have previously, just a little bit of insight into my past. I was dating this extremely toxic person who would mock me in these situations where I needed help, who would definitely not understand me when I needed him to really be my support. So in situations like these, yes, it's extremely important to choose the right kind of people around you, the kind of people who have empathy, the kind of people who will take that extra step to just understand you and to sort of be your pillar, because that takes strength too. To be able to support another person, to be able to understand another person's mental health journey, it's extremely, extremely difficult. Everyone can't just be expected to do it. You've got to groom them. Just as much as you want to groom them to be able to deal with you, you also have to help them through that journey of helping you out. So yeah, it's still a learning process. I would say that in general, the older generation struggles a little bit more with understanding things like triggers, things like panic attacks, right? They haven't been exposed to things like these, whereas us, the millennials and the Gen Z, they have been exposed to these things because of the internet. You see so much conversation around mental health on the internet today. Mm-hmm. So it's not an alien concept to them. So I guess, yes, maintaining that sort of coping mechanism is so important. Updating it is also important, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if not anything else, you also have to keep in mind that some people just don't fully understand you, and that's okay too. It can't be a win-win situation all the time. It can't be victory all the time. But these little battles that you fight with yourself, if you have someone to support you through them, nothing like it. I think that makes a huge difference.
Right. At the cost of sounding, at the cost of underestimating, I'm going to say that you've been through a pretty tense time in your life. But the journey of self-awareness and the confidence that you have in yourself today is what is most inspiring to me. I would like to hear, Ashna, your 2 cents on this journey of self-awareness and owning up to your problems and making efforts to better it. You know, delving into self-care and self-love. What is it that you have to tell our audience?
I'm just going to say that it's extremely important to love yourself. If you don't love yourself, if you don't have utmost respect for yourself and your own journey, it's going to be impossible to be self-aware. And don't be in denial. You know, when you see that something isn't right, when 2 + 2 doesn't add up, when you know that something doesn't fit in the way you're functioning, instead of being in denial and thinking, ah, it's okay, it's probably just a phase, I think you need to ask very important questions like why, how, when. And being self-aware is honestly such an empowering thing. When you master the art of self-awareness, what you realize is that you have so much more control over your actions, over your life. Of course, outcomes can never be 100%. We are not always in control of the way situations and circumstances play out. But what you do have control over is how it affects you and how you in turn react to things. Even then, with all of that self-awareness in place, 1 out of 10 times, you're still bound to mess up purely because you're human. And that's okay. You've got to give yourself that margin of error. You've got to tell yourself that it's okay sometimes to mess up. It's okay to not get it right. It's okay to not fully understand yourself. But learn from that one time, and then 9 out of 10 times, you need to go ahead and tell yourself, no, if I want my life in my control, I'm going to have to take that extra effort to be self-aware. And it makes such a huge difference. There are days with my therapist when I have my sessions once or twice a week, whenever I can. He will sometimes ask me if I'm taking therapy for him or he's taking it for me. So it's because even before he said anything, I've sat in front of him, I've diagnosed myself and said, so yeah, this is what's wrong with me. Now what do I do? So he says, so what am I here for? You know, like, what am I supposed to do if you know all the answers? But of course, he means that jokingly. In fact, I know that he's very proud of me, because that's what he started off with in the first session that I had with him. He said, at the end of maybe a year or two, if you're able to ask the questions before I can ask them, then that is victory to me. And yeah, I'd say he won, and I've won too. It's not an easy journey. It's a tough battle. The toughest battle you will ever fight is the one with yourself and your own mind.
Absolutely.
Because anybody else doesn't really matter. Anybody else is just a variable in your equation, but you are a constant. And the constant needs to be, well, as strong and as powerful as it can be. So to anybody who's listening to this, I would say, learn to be completely aware of who you are, of what you want, and of where you see yourself in the future. And I guess when you set that goal for yourself, it becomes easier to work towards it.
We're very, very thankful to Ashna for sharing a story with us and the listeners. We know it can be daunting sometimes, so we really want to thank you for taking part in this.
Well, thank you so much. I think this was really informative. And I hope more people will book sessions like these with you guys and honestly feel better and do better. And I look forward to more associations. Thank you so much for the great work you're doing. Thank you for making it affordable to people. And I hope you have a great remaining Sunday, the rest of you as well.
A huge thank you to Anisha as well. I think she mentioned a bunch of salient points, which sure helped me, and I'm sure the audience too. So thank you, Anisha. We were very grateful to have you both on board for the podcast.
Thank you, Muskan. It was my pleasure, taking part in this.
Well, Good Lives will be bringing many such inspiring stories to you in the coming weeks. All that remains to be said is, if you enjoyed the podcast, please do subscribe to Mental Blossoms. And if you're feeling particularly generous, please do leave us a lovely review. Until next time, it's thanks and goodbye.